Welcome to the hot stove.
Going and going. Goodbye, baseball. Nelson Cruz.
On 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
The Kings 1-2 swing and a miss. He gets them whiffing on a changeup.
Let's fire up the hot stove and talk some Mariners baseball. Here's your host, Rick Riz.
From the shores of South Lake Union, welcome to our studios here at 710 ESPN, another edition of Hot Stove Baseball. Hi again, everybody. I'm Rick Riz, along with Shannon Dreher. Dave Valley joins us this week, along with producer-engineer Kevin Kremen and Matty Harden right here in the studios. Welcome to another edition of Hot Stove, 2 hours talking baseball. Our guests tonight are going to be Mariner catcher Mike Zunino. What a journey for this kid. We'll find out what it's been like for Mike getting to the big leagues on the early side for a couple of years, and last year starting off at AAA Tacoma, and then coming up and making a difference last year. We're also going to visit with Andy McKay, who's the farm director for the Mariners, and what an influence he has been on this organization down in the minor leagues. All seven clubs, seven teams in the Mariners organization all went to the postseason. Two teams won titles, including the Mariners AA club in the Southern League, the Jackson Generals. So we're going to have Andy McKay on. We'll have our trivia question in the first hour. We'll have Director of Marketing Kevin Martinez in the second hour. A lot to talk about there because of Fan Fest, and Shannon and Dave, I want to talk to you about Fan Fest. And we'll also visit with one of the really good writers covering the game of baseball. Jim Capel from ESPN is going to join us in the second hour of Hot Stove. But Shannon, Dave Valley, welcome. That was a lot of fun this weekend. Great turnout at Safeco Field, kids from 8 to 80, and everybody had a super time. What were your thoughts, Shannon, over the two-day weekend with FanFest?
Well, it was pretty fantastic to come into the ballpark and really have to fight my way through a crowd to get to where we were doing the Hot Stove League show. I mean, the concourses were absolutely full on Saturday, and as you said, young and old alike, and you know, something for everybody. If you wanted to sit down and listen to a talk or participate in a discussion, you could do that. If you wanted to participate in some skills activities out on the field, you could do that. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to watch a really good radio show, you could do that too,
exactly.
If I don't say so myself. So it was neat to see everybody out there and just really kind of get the feeling that baseball really is right around the corner. And it was so fun to meet all of the new Mariners.
Exactly, Val, especially a couple of the youngsters were there. That's what I get a kick out of, seeing Kyle Lewis, who got off to a great start, but unfortunately had the serious knee injury where he had the torn ACL and meniscus, had the surgery, but this kid is coming back. And also see Tyler O'Neill, a young man from Maple Ridge, British Columbia, who had a tremendous year at AA Jackson. He's going to be at AAA Tacoma this year. What was it like for you to meet these youngsters? Because you've been there. You've done that. You could give these kids some great advice.
You know, just watching them there kind of interacting with FanFest, I thought it was a great idea for the Mariners to bring some of these young players, guys that they really believe will be in the major leagues at some point in time, to kind of give them an exposure to the fans, interacting, and, you know, to get them to feel a little bit more comfortable to be at Safeco Field. Because I was thinking, gosh, when I was in AA, if I would have gotten an invite to come to Seattle for a FanFest, they didn't have FanFest back then. But what an honor that would have been to be around the big league players away from the field, but just to be out there and to see all the young talent, to meet some of the new players that have been traded here. It would have been a tremendous honor as a young player. But just to, you know, to go along with the whole idea of FanFest, I just think it's an amazing weekend for Seattle fans, for the players. But to see and listen and talk with all the fans while I was there on Saturday about all the different things that they have going on. You know, some of them we don't get to see, like all the way out in center field and the kids hitting balls over the center field wall or the zip line. How about the zip line?
That was cool.
I guess the line was like two hours long to get on that thing.
Yeah.
But people waited very patiently, and just to see all that stuff going on, it was like a carnival for baseball.
Yeah, you
mentioned they let Rizzi right to the front of the zip line, Val.
Well,
of course.
The shortest ones at first.
Yeah, then he went back.
One of those with the little kids. I was with the second grade. Yeah, good, Shannon. You were there with me. But, no, that's a great idea. You mentioned AA, Chattanooga. You guys had a great ball club.
We did.
Man, alive.
You know, let me take you, see if I can remember. So first base was a guy named Alvin Davis, rookie of the year. Second base was Danny Tarbell. Shortstop was... Was it Darnell Coles?
Darnell Coles.
Third base was Jimmy Presley. Center field was Ivan Calderon, and our starting pitcher that year was Mark Langston. So we had a ton of guys
who became catching.
I was catching behind the plate. A lot of guys, I think it was like eight guys that ended up becoming everyday Major League Baseball players on one team.
Shannon, we went to Chattanooga to play an exhibition game against those guys. And Glenn Abbott was pitching, and Jimmy Presley hit a home run. Now, the Chattanooga ballpark, I spent 8 years in the minor leagues and three in that league with Memphis. The Chattanooga ballpark, Ingalls Stadium, is huge. Way out there in left center field, brick wall. And Jimmy Presley hit one way out to left center field off of Glenn Abbott.
And that wall was about 40 feet high, too, by the way.
Yeah, it was really something special. But to see these kids, that's what I like to see. The great stories at spring training, Shannon. Who are the, in your mind, are going to be the great stories this spring for the youngsters?
Well, it's going to be, you know, they're going to get some opportunities because of the WBC and some players being away for some time. So we're going to get to see a little bit more, I think, of them than we normally would. Very interested to see both on and off the field Andrew Moore. I think that this is somebody that we're going to see during the season. I think he'll be first or second up. Should they need a starter, a spot starter here or there. And, you know, just talking with him and seeing all the homework that he's done even before getting that kind of exposure and, you know, talking with Jamie Moyer as much as he's talked with Jamie Moyer and keeping the journal like Jamie Moyer did, I think his eyes are going to be wide open when he gets into that camp. So it'll be fun to see not only what he can do on the field, and we've heard really good things about that, a very mature pitcher, but also what he does behind the scenes. Tyler O'Neill has been fun to watch the last couple of years. I haven't seen a ton of him, but he's a guy with a lot of personality, and he's kind of a typical young guy. Every now and then he'll go in the wrong direction. He'll turn him around and get him going back the right direction. And we certainly saw that last year with what he was able to do with his approach at the plate. And who would have thought that this big, strong, swing-first kid would turn it around so quickly with the help from the Mariners' developmental staff and all of a sudden become a hitter. And all of a sudden we're talking to him, and he's talking about hitting to all fields, not hitting home runs. Home runs will come. He's learned that. But I think those are two very interesting players right there.
You mentioned Tyler O'Neill. Just having been in spring training when I was managing the Everett team back in 2014, Tyler O'Neill was there. Big, strong, chiseled young man. But there was something about when he hit the ball. He's one of those guys, the sound. He hits the ball hard. And, you know, we clearly saw that with the year that he had last year. So he's going to be one to watch, and he's got a chance to be a special player.
Another guy to watch for me, Val and Shannon, is Mike Zunino. Mike has experience now at the big league level, but to me he's still a young player because, let's face it, he was rushed to the big leagues, you know, 3 years ago. They told him, you're not going to make the club last spring. You're going to go to Tacoma, and we're going to fix a lot of things that you didn't get a chance to work on. What would you tell, being a former catcher and coming through an organization, what would you tell Mike Zunino going into this year, Val?
Well, I think, and I'm interested in talking with him because anytime you're playing the game of baseball, you're going to have ups and downs. You're going to have adversity. Nobody walks through this game and not struggle. Yeah. I mean, this is a very difficult game to play. And for Mike to be rushed into the big league setting the way he was, it's tough to struggle at the plate to get to the point when you're hitting under 200. And I know because I've done it. You start to think, will I ever get another hit? Like, you know, you go up there with this defeatist mindset, and it's a battle every single day to go out there. Mike went through that. He went down to AAA. There's a growth that happens when you get sent back down. There's a different way you start looking at the game of baseball and your commitment to the game of baseball when you struggle that way. And I started to see that last year. I saw the growth in Mike maturity-wise. I've always loved the way he leads. I like the way he calls the game. I like the way the effort that he gives. But there's a maturity level that comes with battling and getting through adversity.
This guy is physically strong, mentally strong. I look for Mike Zunino to have a really big year this year. Welcome to Hot Stove Baseball, everybody. Coming up next, we're going to visit with a young man we were just talking about, Mariners starting catcher Mike Zunino, right after this timeout.
We're cranking up the hot stove on the home of the Mariners, 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
The right-hander's pitch to Zunino. Swing, barreled up high, mile high, left field. This is gone. Beyond the bullpen, Zunino's 12th of the season has given the Mariners a 2-1 lead in the bottom of the seventh.
And the young man who hit that baseball a country mile is our guest here on Hot Stove, Mike Zunino. Mike, how did it feel to hit that thing that far in that game?
Oh, it was something else. You know, just any time to be able to do something to help the team is nice, but when you run into one, it always makes it a little bit better.
Visiting with Mariner catcher Mike Zunino. Mike, welcome to the show tonight. Can't wait till I see you guys, all you guys at spring training. It's just right around the corner. Tell us a little bit about your offseason this year, which what I would imagine is a little bit different than what happened for you last year. How are things going?
Yeah, things are going really well. I mean, definitely last year there was a bunch of stuff that I needed to change and make adjustments to, and I was able to do that and sort of make some strides during the season last year. And this offseason has been much more relaxing but much more focused. I've been able to sort of put my finger on a few things that I really wanted to work on, and, I mean, it's been much more focused in that sense and not feeling like I have to revamp everything.
Mike, I think I heard that Edgar came down there and worked with a few of you.
Yeah, he had came. He went down to Fort Lauderdale, so my wife and I drove down there and made a weekend trip. I was able to hit with him a few times, and it's just nice to be able to see Edgar and sort of hit with him. You mean about a month or month and a half before the season start or the spring training starts, so we can get on the same page and sort of hit the ground running in spring.
What kind of plan did you leave with as far as working with things in the off season, and then what happens when you do meet up with Edgar and he kind of puts eyes on everything?
Yeah, I definitely found out things that were working for me last year and then stuff that I still needed to fix. So it was definitely even simplifying stuff even more, which was the key, and figuring stuff that I can leave out and stuff that were really important in my swing. And it was just sort of open conversation about that with him. And we seem to be on the same page with it, and I've learned a lot from him. So it's always nice to just sort of bounce ideas off him and get his thoughts on things.
Mike at Stave Valley, good to hear your voice, man. I'm glad the winter's going well. I want to have you take me through kind of the process the last year and a half or so, going back down to AAA, getting called back up. Just tell me a little bit about your thought process and how you might be viewing things a little bit. I've gone through this. I went through the same thing, getting called up and down a number of times. What were some of the things that you learned that have really made you a better player?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was you realize, I mean, how special it is to be up in the big league and how big of an honor it is. And I think the hard work that goes into trying to get back is something that gives you a little bit more confidence when you get back up to the big leagues. And, you know, going back down and going through that grind and knowing that you put a lot of work into to iron some things out and getting up and having more success than what you've had is always nice. But my biggest thing was learning about, you mean, still being a good teammate and you mean, just continuing to learn the game. There's a lot of talent in AAA. We had great coaches and a great staff down there, and I just continue to learn. And I was able to bring that up to the big leagues to just sort of keep my mind open to everything.
Mike, as you know better than anybody, and along with Dave Valley here and everybody else too in this room, a catcher has more on his plate than anybody, I think, at spring training because you got to take care of your own business, you know, hitting the baseball and getting ready for the season. Also handling all these pitchers on the staff. And there's a lot of new faces on this ball club this year. Giovanni Gallardo comes over from Baltimore and Drew Smyly from Tampa Bay. How long does it take for you in the early part of a spring to get a chance to get to know these guys and for them to get comfortable with you and on for you on how to handle these guys once a game starts?
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't take too long. I've actually been in contact with Jimmy Hartley, our video guy. He's had sent me video over on all of our new pitchers, and I've been watching that. And we're actually getting some more advanced stuff sent in from our analytic guys, just because I want to be able to hold a conversation with these guys of what they do well, what they're trying to do. So it's not, you mean, 2-3 weeks wasted of trying to talk to everybody. I sort of have a head start on that. And, I mean, we have experienced guys coming in now, too. So they have more of an idea of what they want to do and should be good just being able to talk to them and sort of learning them in any way I can.
Like you mentioned, Mike, you mentioned using some of the analytics guys during the season. How much do you take advantage of that as far as getting a game plan prepared for any particular night?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it changes. I mean, pitcher to pitcher. You know, obviously a guy like Felix is his own animal. He goes out there and just attacks guys and trusts his stuff. But, I mean, when you look at guys like Iwakuma or Paxton, you mean these guys spend a lot of time studying and they know what they want to do. And, you know, we have advanced reports on what guys are doing well at the time, not doing well, their hot and cold zones. It's just that extra information. So when you're in a tough spot and you really need to make one good pitch, you can sort of fall back on the stats that can give you a little bit more of a backbone instead of just a feel thing.
Is that different now, Mike, than it was, say, even 2 years ago when you go to the analytic guys in the off season? Are you getting different information, and how different is that from what you had in the past?
Yeah, I mean, especially with this new staff that we have, I mean, it's part of the game, and we're not shying away from it. Obviously, there's times where there's too much, but, you know, we're trying to educate ourselves, and this staff that we have is great with it. So it's something that we're trying to take full advantage of. I mean, obviously, we use it with all aspects. I just had a conversation with Mike McCucci about, I mean, receiving and framing analytics, and it goes on and on, but we're just trying to use it to better ourselves and sort of just have that extra edge and be prepared when we need to be.
Visiting with Mariner catcher Mike Zunino here on Hot Stove. And Mike, you went down there, you put in the hard work, you earned your way back here, and your first game back here at with the Mariners, you hit that line drive into Edgar's Cantina. Then you hit another home run in that ball game. What did that at-bat tell you about the hard work you put in early in the season down in the minors?
Yeah, I mean, that was the nicest comeback you could have done right there. But it just showed that trust in that process and, you mean, just taking it day by day and knowing that work you put in will pay off. And it just sort of allowed me to sort of keep the foot on the pedal and keep moving forward and continue to work and try to get better, because when you put all that work and you see the results, luckily it was in the first game, it's nice to do that and know that process is working.
Mike, with the rotation that you're going to inherit, you mentioned some of the new guys that you're getting to know a little bit. What about the guys that are coming back? Felix Hernandez, we've heard he's changed the workout, and there were some adjustments to be made. He talked about that openly at the end of the season. What are some of the things that you think that he can do, and what are you looking for him? Kind of in a bounce-back season for him, and hopefully a healthy one.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is his health. I mean, obviously, he's the ace of this rotation, and if he was 100% or not last year, he wouldn't let anybody know. He wanted to take the ball every fifth day when he could. I think the biggest thing that he learned from last year is that he doesn't need to use a lot of pitches to get guys out. So I'm hoping with this new change in workout and stuff like this, obviously he has that strikeout potential whenever he needs it, but I think he did a good job learning to use pitches and set up guys and get guys out in two or three pitches to really keep his pitch count down and go deep in the ball games.
Mike, tell us a little bit about James Paxton. You saw him down in Tacoma last year. Then he comes up, he changes that arm slot. You caught him down in the minor leagues, and then he makes that adjustment. And I tell you what, he was special, especially down the stretch last year. What was it like seeing Paxton early and Paxton later on in the year?
I mean, it was incredible. I remember the bullpen that he sort of changed his arm slot. I mean, just the life on the ball. Usually he had that downhill plane, but all of a sudden there's a little extra ride to it. In the bullpen, it felt like the velo was up. And then the next game, I forget where we were, but you look up at the radar gun, he's in the upper 90s. And it was easy. He was just playing catch. And then with that arm slot, the cutter came easier. He's able to spin his breaking ball much better. It's just something that, I mean, he may have been fighting himself a little bit, but finding that new arm slot has him in a comfort zone. And I'm really looking forward to catching him, you mean, with a full year of that arm slot and feeling comfortable.
Well, Mike, I can't wait to get to spring training to see you working with all these guys. You're going to have one heck of a year. And, Mike, thanks a lot for joining us tonight here on Hot Stove. We'll see you in a few weeks.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me. I'll see you guys soon.
All right. Mariner catcher Mike Zunino. This guy was destined to become a Mariner. He went to Mariner High School in Cape Coral, Florida. And he's going to have an outstanding year. Mike Zunino, our first guest tonight. We'll be back with Mariners farm director. Back in the day, we called them farm directors in the minor leagues. And what a job he did last year for the organization. Andy McKay is going to be our guest here on Hot Stove right after this. Say, friends, Mariners 10-game Plex Packs are on sale now. Love this music, Manny. Enjoy the flexibility of picking the games and events you want to see, including Edgar Martinez's number retirement ceremony this August, August the 12th, out at Safeco Field. Lock up tickets now to make sure you're there for the memorable night before single-game tickets go on sale. For details, log on to Mariners.com/flex. Man, that's going to be a huge night. August the 12th, when the Mariners retire Edgar Martinez's number 11 to go alongside Junior's number 24 and Jackie Robinson's, of course, his number 42. Again, welcome back to Hot Stove 2017. We're going to go down to the farm. We're going to visit with Farm Director, Director of Player Personnel, Andy McKay, who did a tremendous job with this organization. Seven minor league teams going to the postseason, two winning titles. Andy, welcome to the show tonight. You ready to get down to spring training and get
ready.
Back to work?
I'm ready. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh, it's nice to have you here, buddy. First of all, let's talk about the success of the organization. How in the world, you know, you talked about controlling the zone and you worked with the coaches and the managers, obviously, down in the minor leagues, but how in the world does an organization have all seven of their clubs get to the postseason?
Well, you know, I'm going to kind of blow my cover here. I mean, there's an element of luck to that. You know, it's not something that, obviously, that you can sustain year in and year out. But, you know, we did a really good job last year of sticking to our message and, you know, really maintaining what we were trying to do throughout the entire course of the season. And, you know, every club had some ups, every club had some downs, and, you know, they all battled through. And, you know, I think it was just kind of one of those magical years where everything lines up. And I do think our system will sustain a level of success every year. You know, but the idea of having every team get in every year is probably not very realistic.
Andy, I think we talked mid-season, and obviously you can only do so much in one year. You said it would be a few years process in setting the absolute foundation and the systems. If year one was kind of setting that foundation, what's year two?
Well, you continue to work on your process and you try to simplify it as much as possible. And, you know, you're trying to take an enormous amount of information that's available to us and also available to the players. And you're trying to organize it into the most simplistic form you can. You're trying to eliminate any of the information that's not absolutely critical for that player's success. And, you know, that's not easy to do. It takes a lot of work to individualize a program for, you know, approximately 200 players. So, you know, the idea of just simplifying things as much as possible. And, you know, when you play the game, you know, seasons usually come down to a few games, and games usually come down to a couple of pitches. And I think when you look at a baseball game, there's that moment of truth where, you know, in that 2 or 3 seconds before the pitch is about to be thrown, you know, it kind of comes down to what is going on in that player's mind at that moment in time. And, you know, we talk about there's three things that really matter. There's three things that are going to determine who wins that pitch. And, you know, number one, is the player properly trained? And that's all the work that you're putting in, you know, starting at 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock in the afternoon, that you're really training the player for the task at hand. And number two, mentally, is that player able to slow the game down and get out of his own way and let the training take over and do the work for him, which is hard to do. It takes a lot of work. And number three, is this player motivated to help his team, or is he trying to help himself? So our teaching really gets narrowed down to those three things, you know, training them physically, training their mind, and, you know, spirit, you know, training them to put the team first.
You know, Andy, you mentioned that, and I remember back early, it may have even been before you hit the field with the team, you mentioned that second before the pitch or those couple of seconds. I would imagine that physically, the step one and then the step three, that the team player, which we heard quite a bit about that, those are things that perhaps you're further along with, and maybe the harder thing is slowing things down. Is that?
For yourself requires character. And our scouting department has done a tremendous job of bringing in high character people. And our coaching staff, you know, our leadership group, when you have guys like Alvin Davis walking around, you have guys like Dan Wilson walking around, it really drives home that message of team first. And you're exactly right. Slowing the game down, you know, and turning off your mind so that you can go from a thinking person to a reacting person, and doing that every 15 seconds. That is the challenge. And I feel really good about where our coaches are at this point in time. And coming out of our summits where, you know, I felt like one of my key jobs was to get our coaches to look at the game through a slightly different lens, which was the lens of the mental game, and that, the body always follows the mind. And if we're training the body without the mind, we're really kind of spinning our wheels here. So that idea of the mental training and I think we've equipped our coaches with some tools to help, the mental skills group that we've brought in, kind of a three-headed monster. I'm really excited about that. And I think that our group overall is really starting to understand that this game is 100% mental. Therefore, our coaching has to be geared towards that.
Andy, today, Valley, congratulations on a great year.
Thanks, Dave.
First time I heard your name mentioned was when you got hired, and I had a chance to talk to Dan O'Dowd, who I work with over at the MLB Network, and he had nothing but some amazing things to say about you. So, again, congratulations on this year. You mentioned coaches. I know everyone talks about the farm system being about developing players. I read an article that you were quoted in there talking about the development of the coaches, those people who are pouring into those young men that you guys have drafted. Tell me about some of the pillars that you want to kind of apply to the coaches and how they go about teaching the game of baseball.
Yeah, and that's a great question, and that's really kind of the heart of my job is, to some extent, coaching coaches and, kind of creating the curriculum that they're going to be, delivering to the players. And, I think probably first and foremost is getting them to understand their teachers. The player's a student, you're the teacher, and we know what the test is. The test is coming every night at 7 o'clock, and we know the things that are going to come up. And we spent a lot of time last year, and a thing that I really believe in that's difficult. When you look at professional baseball, there are no practice days. Practice is whatever you're able to do before a game, and it's a long season. So, getting your team out there every day at 1 o'clock and putting them through a rigorous practice just is not realistic. Because we all know how difficult the game gets to be in, July and August. But, I have a firm belief that practice has to be game speed. And you've been around the game enough, you've played it, you've seen it, you've watched it, and you just look at how much of the practice time in baseball is spent well below game speed. And for me, it's very ineffective. Now, again, the practice at a higher tempo is a lot easier to do in football where you have 6 days off between games and in the NBA where you have real practice days. I'm almost finished George Karl's book, who obviously coached basketball in Seattle. And, his practices were known as just, being nightmares for the players, how hard they were. And so we've made a real effort to increase the speed of our practice time. And you saw that a lot in spring training last year where the pitching machines were out and our players were hitting velocity. Our players were hitting real breaking balls. The ground balls were being taken with stopwatches. When our pitchers were doing a PFP, there was a stopwatch out in there. They had to get the ball to first base in 4.1 seconds or faster. So I think probably the biggest thing that we've kind of brought into the system in the last year is the idea of speeding up the practice. And making it more game-like and getting kids to understand that, if you're going to hit on a batting tee, which there is benefit to doing that, the benefit is getting your body loose and feeling your body and how it swings and how it's moving, but I'm not sure it really prepares you to hit a 93-mile-an-hour sinker. So I would say that's probably the number one concept that we've brought forth.
Visiting with Mariners Farm Director Andy McKay. Andy, we're going to keep you for another segment. Hopefully that's okay because we've got so much ground to cover as we get ready for spring training. Visiting with Andy, we'll be back with more here on Hot Stove. And again, welcome back to Hot Stove 2017. Rick Riz along with Shannon Dreyer, Dave Valley, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen, and Manny Harden, visiting with Mariners Farm Director Andy McKay. Andy, I want to talk to you. You've been reading the book on George Karl, but as far as the book on the mental side of the game, that was written by Harvey Dorfman. Harvey really had an influence on so many people. I'm sure you read that book. What did you take from that? And tell us a little bit about Harvey Dorfman.
Well, you know, Harvey, you know, I would say it'd have to be the godfather of the mental side of baseball. And, you know, as the sports psychology world was, you know, it really started in the European nations, and it was really driven by Olympic committees, and slowly started making its way into other sports. And it's still in a very, you know, beginning of where it'll be at some point. But, you know, Harvey should be in the Hall of Fame. He really brought it to baseball, you know, starting in the 80s and, you know, kind of got his start with Tony La Russa in Oakland, you know, back in the day. And, you know, he wasn't, was not a psychologist. He was a high school English teacher and girls basketball coach. And his teachings were all things that he'd kind of taught himself and that he had read and kind of put forth. But, you know, he kind of wrote the first book, The Mental ABCs of Baseball, which came out in the late 80s, was kind of your first textbook of how to think about the game and the role that your mind plays in how you actually compete. And it was, you know, for people who read it, it was just kind of like, you know, it was kind of like that first Pearl Jam record that came out. It just blew your mind. It was something, it sounded so different. It wasn't talking about your hands and your feet and how to field a ground ball. It was talking about, where your attention needs to be at certain moments and how to recognize when you're losing focus and how to get it back and so forth. So, I mean, the number of just big name clients, Hall of Fame people that he's worked with is endless. You know, but it really comes down to, are you focusing your attention on the right thing? So, you know, if you're a pitcher on the mound, you know, your mind has an endless number of things that it can choose to focus on. You know, it can focus on hearing the ball hit the catcher's glove in the bullpen because you know someone's getting loose. It can focus on that runner on third base. It can focus on, you know, the pitching coach in the dugout talking to the manager and wondering what he's talking about. It can focus on the last pitch that the umpire called a ball. It can be focused on the on-deck hitter that you don't want to face. But the reality is the only thing that it should be focused on that can help you in that situation is the target and executing the next pitch. And, you know, so it can get very zen-like. You know, it's about letting go of the past and forgetting about the future and just being in the moment. And in baseball, the moment is this pitch. So, you know, that was kind of the foundation. And I think anybody who's worked in the mental game since then has absolutely been influenced by Harvey, even as he's no longer with us, as he's passed away.
Andy, you mentioned the addition of three new mental skills coaches to the organization. What does that look like? Who are they? What are their jobs entail? What happens when they come into one of the minor league affiliates?
Yeah. Well, kind of a three-headed group. Darren McMains will head it up, and he's our peak performance coordinator. He will work primarily with Scott in Seattle with the 25-man roster, and we'll also get into Tacoma as well. Darren played at the AAA with the Giants, had an injury. The Giants took him off the field and made him a coach. Managed for a few years in the minor leagues, and then the Giants sent him to school to get a master's degree in sports psychology and to start their sports psych program with the Giants. So he was there for many years. He has three World Series rings with the Giants, and then he left the Giants to take over, basically to create a mental conditioning program at the University of Notre Dame. So he will be in charge of our program. And like I said, we'll be working primarily with Scott and the big league staff and the major league team. Jimmy Van Ostrand and David Franco will work in the minor leagues. Jimmy was also another professional player, played at the AAA, played in the Futures game, played in the Olympics with Team Canada. Kind of highlighted, had a home run off Clayton Kershaw in the Futures game. And then with coaching college baseball, he was on staff at the University of Arizona last year where they finished second in the College World Series. And then we hired him after that. And then David Franco, who has run a private baseball, kind of a consulting business in Nashville where he's worked with a lot of players at every level from high school to college to minor league to the big leagues. David's also bilingual and will obviously be kind of spearheading our program in the Dominican. So those three guys together, I couldn't be happier with. They've all played the game. They've all coached the game, and they all have training in the mental game. And, you know, with my background, it was hard to find people because I was looking for people who did kind of think the way I thought. And I couldn't be happier with the guys that we came up with and the program that they're going to be able to put together for all of our players from Boca Chica all the way to Seattle.
Yeah, a lot of talented people helping out the kids throughout the organization. Andy, this reminder that for all you fans out there, fans can submit your own questions for our guests each week. Just follow the @Mariners on Twitter to learn more. And here's the question for you, Andy. It's from @MoreBlueSox, and they ask, with clubhouse and team chemistry being bandied around as intangibles, what are the most important factors that contribute to teams on and off the field performance?
Yeah, that's the $10 million question. And I think we're getting better at it. I mean, as an industry, it's just, we've come so far in the last, 20 years. And certainly in Seattle, you've got maybe the best, across the street with Pete Carroll. And, not only what he did at USC, but what he's brought to the Seahawks. But, that you can't answer that question with a specific of, here's the three steps that make the clubhouse good. In the last 3 or 4 years, when Harbaugh was in San Francisco and they were really good and they were playing the Seahawks in those playoff games. And, you'd see this complete polar opposites on opposite sides of the field. And, you'd see Pete over on the Seahawks side, always smiling, never stressed, yeah, hugging on his players. And then you'd see Jim on the other side just breathing fire and, breaking clipboards and throwing headsets. And they both do an unbelievable job at creating culture and molding behavior. And it really comes down to the leader. And when the leader can put forth kind of an authentic program that and that's really true to his values and what he believes in, and he's able to articulate it in a way that other people can grasp onto, it has to be real. And the players have to sense that, what this leader is talking about, he really believes. So there's so many different ways to do it. And if you just look through sports, what Belichick has been able to do and the way Joe Torre did it with the Yankees or Krzyzewski with Duke, Krzyzewski is again, totally different than Roy Williams in North Carolina. It just really comes down to being true to yourself and being authentic and, being vulnerable and letting your the people following you see who you really are. And I know that's probably not as specific as an answer as we're looking for, but that's the reality of it. You just can't put it on a piece of paper and transfer it around because it's unique to every leader and every clubhouse.
Yeah, everybody has their own personality and how to get it done. Well, Andy, last year you got it done, buddy, and I can't wait till spring training this year because I think it's going to be a special year here in Seattle. Thanks to what you've done down there in the minor leagues, these kids are going to really help out, and they did last year. So, Andy, thanks so much for being our guest tonight.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me on.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And Mariners Farm Director Andy McKay. We'll be back with more. We'll start to wind down the first hour of Hot Stove. We'll also have our 40th anniversary trivia question coming up right after this timeout. Winding down the first hour here on Hot Stove 2017. Rick Reyes, Shannon Dreher, Dave Valley, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen, and Maddie Harden. Great visiting with Andy McKay, Mariners Farm Director. Great job last year. Looking forward to getting down to spring training. Shannon, we didn't even get time to ask about any particular players like DJ Peterson and Kyle Lewis and Tyler O'Neill, and even the progress of Mike Zunino and James Paxton last year. But they had that philosophy that they started with the coaching staff and the managers, and it and of course the players, that it really paid off last year.
I think the greatest thing to see is a system, established system, and just how it just carries from level to level to level. There's a language, there are expectations, and I think the best thing that we saw, and I think it's one of the reasons why you saw all of the teams in the playoffs, is they learned to play together as a team and to put the team above themselves. We talked about the PTPAs, the productive team plate appearances. That, I think, is very much ingrained in these players, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in a few years when you see these young players, perhaps not the names, not the big names, the Tyler O'Neills and whatnot, but you know, other players that are going to come up and contribute. It'll be interesting to see if you can look at that and say, yep, that's a Mariner player. That player came up through the Mariners system.
Be the Mariners way. Real quick, Val, you had some pretty good farm directors when you came up as a kid with the Mariners.
Yeah, I did. In 1978, when I signed with the Mariners, the first farm director that I got to know was a guy named Mel Didier. And I still remember some of the things that Mel shared with us. I was only 17 years old. I was up in Bellingham, Washington, and I remember the first time he addressed the team. And a few things that I learned then that have stuck with me the rest of my life. Like, the first line was, he said, "Son, if you're 5 minutes early, you're late. So don't ever be late." So from that time on, I mean, my kids have heard that line over and over. But the other one was, if he said, "Son, if you ever have a problem, we're going to go eyeball to eyeball and belly button to belly button, and we're going to stay right there until we get to the bottom of this thing." And it was just about facing issues and dealing with them, but just a classy Southern gentleman and a great baseball man.
And a heck of a scout and for the Dodgers in the 1988 World Series for Kirk Gibson. All right, time now for our 40th anniversary trivia question tonight. In 2015, Nelson Cruz belted 44 home runs, tying the club record by a right-handed hitter. Whose record did he tie? The winner receives a Mariners team icon streak hoodie, official on-field sweatshirt for the 2017 season. Wear what the players wear. Call toll-free right now, 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. Nelly Cruz, 44 home runs in 2015. Whose record did he tie? Back with the second hour after this.
This is the home of the Seahawks.
Intercepted, Richard Sherman.
The Mariners. Holy and the pump of Seattle sports. 710 KIRO AM Seattle. Bob, Graz, and Tom. Weekdays noon to 3.
NFC West looking a little different next year. Specifically, Graz, your San Francisco 49ers.
How about the Niners?
What if Lynch is a brilliant football mind?
Not a chance.
And he can evaluate talent like nobody's ever seen before.
Matt Millen all over again, baby. This is not going to work.
6-year commitment to this man.
So immediately it has to make you think of Matt Millen.
Of course. He's the only other guy. He's the other guy who got the job in the same circumstances.
Bob, Graz, and Tom. Weekdays noon to 3 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This station, the one you're listening to right now, with the Next Radio app, you can take it with you wherever you go. So you know that time you walked away from your radio to go out to lunch with all your friends and missed that thing on the radio everyone was talking about the next day? If you've got the Next Radio app, it doesn't ever have to happen. It's not streaming. It's over-the-air radio on your phone. It takes way less battery and almost no data and brings you this radio station free the way nature intended. Download the Next Radio app from the Google Play Store and keep this station with you. Next Radio, live and local, wherever you go.
Hi, I'm Brian from 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Excellent. Follow me. Here, grab the other end.
But sir, we're a full-service junk removal company.
I'm not sure what that means.
Would you point at it for me?
Sure, that's it, right? Wow.
All you have to do is point.
Can you empty my storage room at work?
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK and we'll meet you there. We're here to make you happy.
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or visit 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
There are thousands of individuals with disabilities in our community who need a variety of different kinds of supports in order to really be able to live life the way they want to live it.
And for the last 75 years, Seattle-based ProVail has been doing just that.
Essentially, what we do is help children and adults with disabilities figure out how they want to live their life in the community, and then we provide them with the support services to make that happen.
That's everything from job training and placement to assistive technology ranging from powered wheelchairs to speech computers.
Find the right technology and you begin to unlock doors and create opportunities for them to communicate in ways that their family members and the people around them never thought was possible. We see it happen all the time.
That's why Bonneville, Seattle, the Seattle Seahawks, and Carter Subaru are proud to honor ProVail as our charity of the month.
At ProVail, we believe that every person has a right to pursue the life they choose to live, regardless of what their disabilities might be.
But they can't do it without our help. Learn what we can do at ProVail.org or MyNorthwest.com.
Welcome to the Hot Stove.
Going and going. Goodbye, baseball. Nelson Cruz.
On 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
The Kings 1-2 swing and a miss. He gets them with me on a changeup.
Let's fire up the Hot Stove and talk some Mariners baseball. Here's your host, Rick Riz.
And we're getting fired up for the 2017 season. More Hot Stove coming your way. This reminder, add more excitement to your group outing at the ballpark with a hospitality package. Choose from one of the hospitality areas, each with its own great view of the field, plus customize your food and beverage package with a buffet, private bartender, and more. To see the many options available to you this season at Safeco Field, visit Mariners.com/groups. We sold a lot of season tickets over the weekend at FanFest at Safeco Field. Okay, time for the answer for our trivia question. Here was the question. In 2015, Nelson Cruz belted 44 home runs, tying the club record by a right-handed hitter. Whose record did he tie? For the answer, let's go to the Audio Vault, Matty.
Pitch on the way, swing and a drive deep to left field. We have liftoff. Goodbye, baseball. Upper deck in left field. Down the line. Jay Buhner reaches the upper deck in left field here in the Kingdom. A mammoth two-run shot, and the Mariners take a 2-0 lead.
The announcer got excited.
Who was that guy?
Who was that guy? Wow, he crushed that ball.
Hey, let me tell you something. Going in the upper deck in the left field,
that's a long,
was a bomb.
Yeah.
He had the brown stakes, but they were pushed very far back compared to right field.
Yeah.
Not to take anything away from Junior going in the upper deck, but going in the upper deck in left field was a long, long way.
And he did it. The one and only Jay Buhner, the Bone, hit a total of 44 home runs back in 1996. One of a club record 245, but that was bested the next year. 1997, as the club hit 264, and that to this day is still a major league record for home runs by a club in a single season. So the winner of the Mariners Authentic Collection Team Icon Streak hoodie is Jen Heward from Seattle. Congratulations, Jen. Wear what the players wear. Jen Heward from Seattle gets the hoodie. So thank you so much. Rick Riz, along with Shannon Dreher and Dave Valley, Kevin Krem and Maddie Harden as well. What a night out talking about baseball. And coming up next in the second hour here, we're going to visit with Kevin Martinez. And we're going to have a lot to talk about, a lot going on this year. The PR staff, the promotions department, the marketing department. I tell you what, these guys do an incredible job, led by Kevin Martinez. And, Shannon, I can't wait for that weekend in August when the Mariners retire Edgar's number on August the 12th.
Oh, it is so deserved, and it's great to see it happen now. And I think that that's something we've seen kind of the build up for, and he's getting closer and closer to the Hall of Fame. I think this is something that helps. But it's also, I mean, Junior's been a little bit lonely out there the last couple of months, and to see Edgar out there with him and the appreciation that Edgar has for that, I think it's just fantastic.
Yeah, great ceremony for Junior last year. Val, you played with the man, Edgar Martinez. You watched him every day, and that's why I get sideways with writers who say, he was a DH. I saw the man, like you, put on a uniform every day and play. He was the best one of the greatest hitters I've ever seen in the game of baseball. We can go on and on and on. But you played with the guy. What made him so great?
There were so many things about Edgar, and I saw him develop from we were teammates in the minor leagues, and I saw him coming up, getting smarter, getting stronger. It seemed like every year he just got better and better, and he was relentless in pursuing greatness. I think watching him day in and day out, the routines that he put himself through, all great players have routines. I think if you looked at any great player, you know, we've heard about Wade Boggs and his timing, you know, at 717, he would do this and he'd eat chicken every day. But watching Edgar go through his routine, and I don't know if a lot of folks know this because, you know, he's had some eye issues. He would do eye training to strengthen the eye because the eye is a muscle. And he would have to strengthen do the eye training to continue to work out his eyes. And he had the string with the balls on it that you have to focus, then focus a little bit further, then focus a little bit further and kind of go back and forth because he had kind of a lazy eye.
Yeah.
But all of those things that he was able to overcome and still go out there and put up the numbers that he did. The argument of a DH not being worthy of the Hall of Fame is absolutely
ridiculous,
ludicrous. It is a position on a Major League Baseball field. Paul Molitor, I don't know what the split
was. One-third for Molly.
A third.
One-half for Frank Thomas.
You know, so forget about all that. Forget the DH. You don't even bring that to the arguing table.
Yeah.
Let's look at his numbers. Edgar Martinez's slash line for his 18-year career was over 300, over 400, and over 500. So batting average, on-base percentage at 400, slugging percentage over 500. He's one of only 21 players in the history of baseball to have a slash line of 300, 400, and 500. That simple argument alone, that's only 21 guys who have ever done it, that means he belongs in.
The other 20, Val, are in the Hall of Fame.
That's right. So, I mean, just that one statistical analysis, and that's a very brief one. It's a very broad one. But this is a guy that won two batting titles from the right-hand side. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm sure there's someone out there that will tell me I'm wrong, but when he won his second batting title, I think he was the first right-handed hitter in like half a century to win two batting titles in his career.
Because everybody was left-handed.
Everybody was, yeah.
Right
you start,
through.
Yeah, you start thinking all about
guys.
All those.
Wade Boggs.
Things. Yes. And to watch him do it every day. You know, I had my best year when Edgar was hurt in 1993. Edgar, remember, he tore his hamstring. So he was sitting on the bench, and he became my hitting coach every day. Okay, Poppy, tell me about this guy. What should I be looking for?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is how he's going to try to get you out, Val. Okay, you know, if he falls behind, if he gets ahead. And then actually him and then Mike Blowers saw me doing it. So he comes sit down next to him too.
Hey, Edgar.
It's like, hey, there's too much of a wealth of information and knowledge. And I think we've seen that being passed on to the players since Edgar has gotten here. You know, the offensive numbers for this ball club, almost to the day he showed up.
Yeah.
Things have just turned around. Yeah. And, you know, he has so much to offer the players, so much to offer the team. And should he be in the Hall of Fame?
Absolutely.
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 And I can't wait to fly to Cooperstown again and enjoy watching Edgar take that stage.
One of the neat things coming back from Junior's Hall of Fame induction in Cooperstown this year, Kevin and I and Rick Griffin and Edgar were coming back. We were delayed for about, 5 hours, Kevin, in Philadelphia. We sat next to Edgar Martinez at a stand there and beverage stand and just visited. You know, it was great. I go, man, we're stuck here with Edgar Martinez. How cool is that?
Can I share a story about Edgar Martinez and Rick Reyes?
Please.
Do we have a little bit of time?
Sure. Yeah.
So do you remember it was in Anaheim, right? Post game. We're all at the hotel.
At the end of the year.
At the very end of the year. And Brett Boone is starting to get on Rick, just kind of, you know, give him.
Like you did every day, every week.
Just needling. Just needling you.
All fun.
You know?
Yeah.
And Rick Riz is sitting there just kind of laughing. And Edgar's sitting across the table. And he, you know, very slowly and, you know, he says, hey, Booney. He goes, you should be easy on Rick. He's had a better year than you.
True story. It's 2004. It's his last year.
It was the first time Booney was speechless. He didn't know what to say. He was just like.
Yeah.
Dumbfounded.
I go, Poppy, don't leave me. I got him for another few more years. Don't leave me, man. But he's smoking a cigar. You brought these wonderful cigars, and he takes a draw on the cigar. He goes, hey, Booney, don't get on Rick. He's had a better year than you did. You know, I go, oh, my gosh. I love the man. And put him in the Hall of Fame, for crying out loud. We're going to be back with a Hall of Fame marketing guy, Kevin Martinez of the Seattle Mariners. We'll be back with Kevin after this. Welcome back to Hot Stove 2017. Rick Ray, Shannon Dreyer, and Dave Valley. And we have a chance right now to visit with a gentleman who does such a great job in the Mariners front office as our director of marketing. He is the Mariners version of Bill Veeck. He makes it fun to come out to the ballpark. So many things to do, and he makes it such an enjoyable experience year after year after year. FanFest was a tremendous success. Kevin Martinez, welcome to Hot Stove tonight, buddy. How you doing?
Doing great, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Tell us your thoughts about FanFest over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday. It looked like we had some great crowds. Was that an all-time high, or it's got to be close to it? How much fun was that for the fans?
It was close. It wasn't an all-time high. It was our second-best attendance. And you know, the thing about FanFest that's so great is the access that every fan gets to our great game, you know, to get down on the field, to get down on a major league field, to run the bases, hit a ball over the wall, play catch with a family member or friend out in the outfield. I mean, that's a pretty special experience and memory. And then the access to the guys and you guys, you know, you and Val and Aaron and, you know, Dave Sims, all the broadcasters, to be up close during those dugout dialogue sessions. It is. It's a really fun baseball party all weekend long at Safeco Field, and we look forward to it every year.
Kevin, a lot of planning goes into you guys really don't have any downtime. So much goes into what's coming up for the upcoming year, and this just seems to be a ridiculously, like an embarrassment of riches when it comes to promotions and celebrations at the ballpark coming up in 17.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's our 40th anniversary, and we'll be celebrating it all season long. You saw at FanFest the guys on the jerseys, they had the 40th anniversary patch. The baseballs that'll be used at Safeco Field will be extra special. They'll have that 40th anniversary logo on them, so every foul ball will be a little bit more collectible this season. There'll be other things to celebrate the 40th anniversary in terms of visuals throughout the ballpark. And then the players will be welcoming back many of the players, starting with the guys from the very first team in 1977 through the years. And I think you'll see so many familiar faces, which will elicit so many different moments and memories in Mariners history, and just the celebration of baseball here in Seattle for the last 40 years. That's going to make this season even that much more memorable. And yeah, the events, there's all kinds of special giveaways. If people haven't checked out the giveaways this year, it's a tremendous lineup. And we encourage you to go to mariners.com and check out those various giveaways. And I heard you earlier talking about Edgar Martinez weekend. And, you know, when the vote came out from the Hall of Fame and Edgar received close to 59%, and John Stanton and Kevin Mather met with the board, the directors, and they decided to say, hey, we're going to retire Edgar's number. We went into action really quick. And we're still working on all the details of that weekend, but August 11th, 12th, and 13th is going to be Edgar Martinez weekend, and certainly the highlight of the summer, at least from my perspective. That's going to be such a magical weekend, and it couldn't happen to a more deserving man, but not to a better guy either. As all you know, he is just a gem of a man, and it's going to be really one of those weekends. Junior's weekend was terrific, and it'll be right on par with it. So we're really excited to have the opportunity to put that special weekend together.
Kev, you guys do such an amazing job. FanFest, it seems like every year there's something different, there's something new for the fans to enjoy, to bring them a little bit closer to the game. I'm just kind of curious, you know, you've been doing this for quite a while. What is like the most fun part of your job? I mean, because you're bringing so much joy and happiness to the fans as they experience Safeco Field in the game of baseball. What's been the most fun thing for you?
Well, you know, that's a great question. It's a really difficult one to answer because and it sounds maybe a little too idealistic, but I truly believe it. As somebody who grew up loving the game of baseball. And it was really, I grew up with two older brothers, and it was the way the three of us interacted with my dad. Baseball was at the centerpiece of our family. And there was the last thing in my mind was that I would have an opportunity to work for a Major League Baseball team. And growing up East, I had to come all the way to Seattle for the opportunity, but it was one that as soon as I walked in that office the first day and walked into the Kingdom, which was a whole weird experience for somebody who's used to outdoor baseball, it just felt right, Val. It was something that I knew it was never going to feel like work, and how can we bring fans or people closer to our game? I have such a love for the game of baseball. And just try to share that enthusiasm and come up with different ways to connect people to the game of baseball. And I truly believe it's through the players. I've always felt that. I've always felt the connection from a fan's perspective is through the players. And that's why we promote all of our players so aggressively. And we have for the last, oh, gosh, even before I got here, but it's a Mariner way, but, you know, for probably close to 40 years, that's been the emphasis. And when you have great guys like Ken Griffey Jr. and Edgar Martinez and Dave Valle and Jay Buhner and Dan Wilson, it just it makes it that much easier. And now with this group of guys, Felix Hernandez, it doesn't get any better than him. And right. Robbie Cano has been a treat to get to know. And that's our job. Our job is to bring fans to closer to our game. And we try to get as creative as we can. And we're blessed to have guys who appreciate it and get it and work with us. And I think what we do is pretty special out here. And and you said you can see that in the enthusiasm we saw this weekend at Safeco Field.
Well, Kev, on behalf of all the former players and alumni of the Seattle Mariners, I want to thank you for making all those guys, the older players, the guys that the former players feel like such a part of this organization.
Yeah, it's something we need to do, and we've got a history now. And, you know, the Mariners are still a relatively young organization, but we've got a lot of history and a lot of memories, and we're gonna continue to do that. And I think you're going to see that on display this season throughout. So, Val, warm up your right arm because you're going to be throwing out a first pitch before a game this year.
All right.
And there might be a little side wagering in the back hallways whether you throw a strike or not. So.
It might be a submarine pitch by this at this point in my life.
It'll get there, I know that.
Absolutely.
Visiting with Kevin Martinez. Kevin, you do such a great job, and you mentioned a lot, you know, the giveaways at the ballpark. They're always a lot of fun, but there's always unique events too, like Bark in the Park and, you know, things like that. But King's Court, is there an organization in baseball that does a better job featuring one of their players and having a love fest like that between the fans and a player every time he takes the mound than King's Court when Felix Hernandez gets
you know, and that and I've said it before to people, and it's because of who Felix Hernandez is, not just as a pitcher, but his enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the fans have such a connection with Felix, and you can see that every night, even before the King's Court. Felix would always acknowledge the fans. And then when the King's Court came to be and the energy and the creativity of the outfits and signs from the fans. And, you know, Felix, whenever he was done with his 7-8 innings or 8-plus innings, walking off the mound and pointing to the King's Court, that's what it's all about. And, that's a really unique part of Mariners baseball. And I hope it continues for many, 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 many years to come, and Felix, like Edgar, finishes his career in a Mariners uniform, because that is a very unique aspect of Mariners baseball.
Kevin, one of the things that really kind of snuck up at me when I was looking at the promotions calendar was we're going to have the statue, and we're going to have that statue pretty quick. I'm talking about the junior statue. I cannot believe that it's almost finished and it will be installed soon. I know you can't tell us a lot, but what can you tell us right now? And then tell us one more thing about it.
You bet. Well, we're going to have an awesome giveaway on that first Friday night at the ballpark for 45,000 fans. We're going to be giving replicas of the statue away. So if you're a collector or just a junior fan, this is a night you're going to want to attend to get this really cool collectible of the replica of the junior statue. It's going to be right outside of home plate is where we will unveil the statue at Safeco Field. And we're still working on the date. To be honest, it will either be Thursday, April 13th, or the morning of Friday, April 14th. We're working through some last-minute logistics there and working with Junior and his schedule. We'll have an announcement on that hopefully in the next week or so and when the actual unveil will be. But we're really excited. We're working with the same sculptor who did such a wonderful job with the Dave Niehaus statue that is out in right field at Safeco Field. And Junior will be right out front, our front door, if you will, at Safeco Field, right outside the home plate gate, greeting fans for many, many generations to come. And I think it's appropriate that he's right there at the doorstep of Safeco Field.
Oh, my goodness, I love it. What a way to come into Safeco Field and seeing Junior's statue coming up in April. And nobody does it better than you, buddy, you and your entire crew. So it's going to be a lot of fun, great promotions, great events. And fans, you don't want to miss the 2017 season. Come on by. Get yourself a season ticket as well to really enjoy everything.
It's going to be a blast. And because this is probably my final Hot Stove appearance, Rick, I wanted to just give a tip of the cap to a guy who's been there and is part of this organization for 35 years, and this is his final year. But, you know, for years we hear his name every broadcast, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen. And Kevin embodies the whole spirit of our front office, goes above and beyond, and he doesn't get a lot of the glory. He's not, you know, on the air, but, man, without him, these broadcasts don't sound nearly as good and aren't as complete as they are. And it's been one of my favorite things of my Mariner career over 25 years has been able to work with Kevin. And this is going to be a fun year. And he's going to be part of this 40th anniversary celebration as well, darn it.
So, where does the statue go?
There's not one.
In the Diamond
Thanks,
Club.
Thanks, Kev. That was very nice. Appreciate that.
You bet.
Yeah, no, he's the best. And there isn't a better segment on Mariners Magazine than Road Eats. How good is that, Kevin Kremen? So, but Kevin, thank you so much for being on the program tonight. We appreciate it, buddy. Looking forward to 2017 and all that you and your folks who work for you have to offer the fans when they come out to Safeco Field. Thanks so much, Kevin.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Martinez, Mariners Vice President of Marketing. We'll be back with Jim Capel from ESPN.com talking all things baseball. And, of course, we'll talk Edgar Martinez and the Mariners as well. Back with Jim Capel on Hot Stove right after this. Hey, everybody, take advantage of the Safeco Field Suite Special going on right now. When you pay in full for two or more suites, you're going to receive a free private suite for select games in April and May. Your clients will enjoy a great space to catch the game. You're going to enjoy the savings you'll secure with a special offer. For more information, log on to mariners.com/premium. Hot Stove continues. Rick Briz, along with Shannon Dreyer and Dave Valley, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen and Maddie Harden, visiting now with one of the outstanding writers who has covered the game of baseball for many, many years, grew up here in the state of Washington, the pride of Longview, Washington, went to the University of Washington and wrote for many years here, moved on to the Midwest, Jim Capel, now with ESPN.com. Did I miss any stops there? I'm sure you did, Jimmy.
No, you got it right. Yes, Longview, UW, back in Seattle.
Okay, the pride of Longview, along with Buddy Black and Rick Sweet. Got some guys coming.
Oh, definitely. We produce some players.
Yeah, Jim, tell us a little bit about as far as a writer, what's the off season like? I mean, this is busy. This is your season of seasons. You know, with all the trades and free agents and all the baseball news going on as clubs get ready. What's your winter been like covering baseball?
Well, I haven't been writing too much. They don't have me writing too much about baseball these days in the winter. But God, it really is not an off season for most of the writers. They are, as I would say, even busier during the off season than they are during the season. There's just everybody's got to have every rumor's got to be printed. It's got to be tweeted. It's got to be out there, and it just never ends. And I really feel for them. I don't know if I could do it.
Jim, it was I'm going to turn the topic to Edgar here a little bit. I know you've seen him play quite a bit. And one of the things that I was very encouraged in the balloting that we saw for Hall of Fame this year was there was a considerable jump of ESPN.com writers who voted for him this year. In some outlets, you don't see that, but I think there were five more this year. I believe it was 15 out of 17 that voted for him. What's kind of the tide that's turning. What do you see right now and that's kind of going in his favor and kind of capturing the attention of some people who didn't vote for him before, perhaps put up the argument that it was a DH and that wasn't a position that should be in?
Well, I've always thought that the DH, and I've always voted for Edgar. I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. That the DH is certainly much more part of the game and much more valuable than a closer who only pitches one inning with a lead, every two or three, 2 days and takes a day off. Meanwhile, the DH is out there every day, and he is helping the team, and he's helping them get a lead. And I think some people who were sort of anti-DH are now more, oh, yeah, I guess the DH is pretty valuable. And, you know, Edgar did jump more percentage points than anybody else did this year in the voting. And the problem is he's only got two more years left on the ballot. And it's going to be really close as to whether he makes it or not. I hope he does, but, boy, it is just so close. I he's still got a ways to go. And it's going to be difficult. But I hope he is.
How much has the sabermetric world helped out Edgar once? A lot of these writers who maybe haven't really get a chance to see him play down through the years to take a look at those numbers. I mean, we go over the numbers quite a bit, and we have. How much has that has helped Edgar because he's put up?
Yeah, I mean, when
numbers.
You look at his numbers, they're just even if you're not even to the sabermetrics, just look at the baseline. You know, just the batting average, the on base percentage, the runs produced, and then when you look at the WAR and all those other numbers, it makes it clear just how good a hitter he was. I remember when I was covering the 95 series, and I called up Tom Kelly, who was the manager of the Twins at the time, and I said, what do you think of Edgar? And he was just saying, oh, I would never pitch to Edgar if I didn't have to. He's the best hitter in baseball. And this is a guy who really rarely would compliment anybody else on another team. And Edgar, in addition to what he did at the plate, he's now doing it as the batting coach. I think he's been extraordinarily valuable, and he still is, and he never left the team. And I think he might have had a better success had the Mariners realized how good he was early on and brought him up earlier when they should have. But he is – you look at the numbers, and there's just no doubt he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Jim, so you've been voting for quite a while now, and I know there's going to be a change next year where – everybody needs to reveal their voting. How do you feel about that? And is there anything about the voting that you would like to see changed?
I'm not in favor of that everybody's vote gets revealed. All my votes are always revealed by ESPN, so it's not a big deal to me. But I think there's going to be some people who aren't going to like it. On the other hand, there is a belief that because your vote is going to be revealed, that you may start voting for some extra people. So that might help some players. Hopefully it will help Edgar. My main gripe with the voting process is that we are only allowed to vote for 10 players, which I think is just completely insane. It's wrong. You should be allowed to vote for whoever you think belongs in the Hall of Fame. And if nobody else agrees with you, or if 75% of the other voters don't agree with you, the guy's not going to get in the Hall of Fame anyway. Right. You should be allowed to vote for who you think belongs in. And when you have a limit of 10, it just hurts players who deserve to be in.
I agree with you. Visiting with Jim Capel from ESPN.com. And we're going to be back with Jim here on Hot Stove right after this. Visiting with writer Jim Capel from ESPN.com. And, Jim, the whole baseball world gets together every 4 years. This year, the World Baseball Classic is coming up. What an event to see all the players going to their respective countries, representing their respective countries. So much fun, the excitement in the stands, and it's really been great for baseball globally. What's it like to cover the World Baseball Classic?
Oh, I just absolutely love it. You get to see these players from all over the world. You know, a lot of them are in the major leagues anyway, but you get to see players who aren't, and you get to see the game growing in other countries. And I think that's a great thing, and I really wish that there were some American players who would take it a little bit more seriously. I understand that they're like, oh, we've got to get ready for the season, and that's the priority, and they're right in a lot of ways. But, yeah. You know, playing in the World Baseball Classic, it's pretty exciting. It's a little bit like the Olympics, and I think this year is going to be really good. I mean, it's really interesting. They've got two rounds are going to be in Japan, And hopefully Japan will advance because I think they've got perhaps the best player in the world in Shohei Ohtani, who not only can pitch, he can hit. And he's basically the only guy who's done this since Babe Ruth. And if he can get into the finals, then American can see him. And then I'm pretty sure he's going to sign with somebody after this season.
Jim, what's been your most memorable international baseball experience?
I covered games in Cuba and Greece, Australia, Japan, and also Germany and Regensburg. And that's where I first met Max Kepler, who I think is one of the more interesting players you're ever going to see in baseball. He is from Berlin, and he's a great player. He's got a great, great swing, plays with the Twins. But the most interesting part about him is his parents are both ballet dancers, and they met while dancing in Berlin. And I mean, how many players can you say about that in baseball that they're the son of ballet dancers?
One.
Max Kepler. That's pretty amazing. Just covering, watching when the major leaguers go over to Japan and play there sometimes in the off season is pretty exciting. And the thing is, it just shows you just how popular this game is in so many countries. And Australia, Taiwan, and there's players coming up now in China. And I think they're going to get better, and eventually we're going to see a player from mainland China in the major leagues. And I don't think people realize just how popular baseball really is globally, and it really is a fantastic game, and the World Baseball Classic only helps it.
Yeah, I went to a game down in Arizona during the spring at Chase Field, and Mexico was playing, I think, maybe Puerto Rico, and the excitement in the crowd was just, phenomenal. Everybody really got into it and made a lot of noise. So,
yeah. Yeah. I remember I saw, getting back to Shannon's question, I remember seeing Yu Darvish pitch in Sapporo, Japan when he was pitching there. And just seeing, wow, and then the enthusiasm for him and just how good he was. And getting to see all the other players there. And then going to the Ichiro Museum, which is just incredible with the things that are in that museum that his father has saved during his childhood. He's got, there's a desk with him with a mannequin that looks like Ichiro working on his homework and with an abacus there. And there's just all these things, including all his driver's license tests. It really is amazing. And, then they have museums for him. They have a museum for other players as well. It's a pretty amazing thing. They really, really love baseball in Japan.
Jim, you're talking about the American team. It seems as this may be their strongest team that they've ever put out there in the World Baseball Classic. What do you think?
I'm not sure yet. It's hard to tell. I mean, we're not going to really know until the 6th, I think, is when they announce all the rosters. I think they've got some good players, and McCutcheon's a great player. That's good to see him on there. I just wish that Mike Trout was on the team. I like Trout. I think he's the best player in the major leagues. I would like to see him just play for the American team in the World Baseball Classic. I would like to see the U.S. Get to the finals this year and win, but we will see. You never know in any sport, and you certainly don't know in baseball who's going to win.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Visiting with Jim Capel from ESPN.com. Jim, in your career, you've been around the game, writing and covering the game of baseball for a long time. I called you some years ago the modern-day George Plimpton because ESPN had you doing some fun, wacky things, facing R.A. Dickey. What sort of things did they have you do, and what one stands out?
Oh, there's just too many. It just related to baseball or
anything, yeah. Any sport? Let's start with baseball.
Okay, well, like catching R.A. Dickey was amazing. I mean, he was still working on his knuckleball, and he was still coming up, and he was with the Mariners at the time, and getting to know him, he's a great, great person, yeah. And that was trying to catch that knuckleball was not
were you
easy.
Able to do it?
I was probably not as good as you, Val, but I was able to catch some of them.
Hey, that's a rough day at the office having to catch a knuckleballer, let me tell you.
There was a lot of the glove over here and the glove over there.
Yeah, let me see. I went back to the screen several times.
That was fun.
I batted against Matt Thornton, and at least I didn't strike out on 3 pitches. It took him 4. But nonetheless,
which was scarier,
was
catching
fun.
The knuckleball or facing Thornton? And how hard was Thornton?
Well, I was wearing a cup when I was catching the knuckleball. So
smart move. Never leave home without it.
And I talked with Thornton afterwards. He was saying that he was kind of nervous because he didn't want to throw anything that might hit me, or he didn't want to he wasn't sure if he wanted to throw it as hard as he possibly could. But then his first pitch was a ball, and then he said, "Oh well, I got to strike this guy out." So then he bared down and just whipped me that pretty good.
Did you make contact?
No, I did not. I don't think I even came close.
Did you face Bert Blylevin?
No, but Bert Blylevin. Oh yes, I did. I did after his career was over, in a camp where people come in.
Fantasy,
and fans come in and play. And I went up to plate, and this was before he had been elected to the Hall of Fame. And as I stepped into the box, I looked at him on the mound, and I said, "You know I have a vote in the Hall of Fame." And then the very next pitch he threw, and he hit me in the lower back. And
oh,
I said,
"I love it.
I vote for you. Don't get me wrong. I vote for you." And then I chased him out on the mound, and he grabbed me and threw me to the ground.
Okay. I hope there's video of that somewhere.
Bert's a big boy.
And when I was when he was still pitching in my first year covering the game, he set my my shoelaces on fire.
I don't know why we're laughing, but it's I tell you what, you have done a lot of fun things in the game. You've been one of the outstanding writers covering the game of baseball, Jim Capel, and the pride of Longview, Washington, along with Buddy Black and Rick Sweet and others who have come out from that area. Thanks a lot for joining us tonight, and hopefully we'll see a bunch of you this year and at spring training. What are your plans? Going down to Arizona?
I'll be covering a lot of the World Baseball Classic and then hoping to get into get over to the Cactus League towards the end of March. But I want to meet with you guys.
All right, we'll see you there. Jim, thanks a lot for coming by tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Jim Capel from ESPN.com, and we'll be back to wind down the second hour of Hot Stove from our ESPN studios here in Seattle after this timeout. Well, the time is now to join the club as a Mariners season ticket holder. Lock in the best seats at the best prices to catch all the action at Safeco Field here in 2017. And I'm telling you, folks, it's going to be an exciting season. You don't want to miss any of the action. For more information on the many benefits you're going to enjoy as a season ticket holder, log on to Mariners.com/17. Rick Brea, Shannon Dreher, Dave Valley, producer engineer Kevin Krem, and Matty Harden winding down the second and final hour of the Hot Stove. We've got about 4 minutes left here. Our guest, Mike Zunino, was our first guest tonight in the first hour. Great to see, Val, this young man come back. And I think, you know, he's going to put together a heck of a year after what he went through last year.
I think he's going to play a really important role in his ball club and their success this year, because if he can regain some of the confidence that we saw from him a few years ago where he hit over 20 home runs, if he could add that to this lineup offensively, he doesn't have to hit 300. I mean, if he can hit 240, 250, driving some runs at the bottom part of that order, and continue to do the quality job that he does behind the plate, he'll have a huge impact on this ball club.
Shannon, we also had a chance to visit with Andy McKay, who is our farm director, and we saw a lot of young kids come up and really help out the Mariners. How many players did they go through last year? 51 players on the roster, 13 starting pitchers, but we saw kids like Sean O'Malley. Well, Sean's been around for a while, great kid. But Mike Freeman and Ben Gamble coming over, and Dan Vogelbach.
Diaz Altavilla.
I mean, the kids coming through really helped out last year, especially in that late run with the 8-game winning streak that put the Mariners into a playoff hunt.
Well, and that's the goal. And Andy McKay at the pre-spring training media luncheon said, you know what, it's great to win these games and win championships in the minor league levels, but that's not the goal. The goal is to provide players with ability and provide depth and flexibility to the big league club. And they were able to do that in the first year. I think you're only going to see more as they have a little bit more time to get these systems in place. And, yeah, you know, very interesting to hear what they were able to kind of get down in the first year. It's a 3-4 year process to kind of set that culture and set those systems. And he's got year two all planned out and ready to go.
And Dave Valley, can't wait for August the 12th when Edgar Martinez is number 11, is going to be retired. You wore number 10, he wore number 11. And it's going to be a great weekend, not only just that Saturday, but Friday and Sunday as well. And can't wait to see Poppy have that tremendous night coming up.
Well, we saw how special it was when Junior had his weekend, and I don't think this will be any less special when Edgar's number is retired out there on August 12th. I know I will be in the crowd somewhere, whether I'm working it or just being there to support my buddy and my pal, mi amigo y mi hermano, Edgar Martinez.
Oh, man, he was something. 2004, his final year in the big leagues. It's so nice to see that number 11 still in the dugout, you know, as the hitting coach for this ball club. And on the marketing side, we had Kevin Martinez on tonight. And, Shannon, it doesn't get better than what this guy does for the organization and his crew, everybody, you know, that works with Kevin, to make it such a fun experience to come out to Safeco Field.
Absolutely, and it's going to be a big year. Some things that I didn't know. I didn't know they were going to have the 40th anniversary logo on the baseballs. So, you know, everybody go practice catching your fly balls, because those are going to be collectible if you get a home run or a foul ball at the ballpark. The Griffey statue is coming up very quickly. We'll see that in mid-April, which is very exciting, plus everything else they do at the ballpark.
That's right. I can't wait to see the statue. I'm hoping it's that swing, that iconic swing that Junior had, Val.
Oh, it's got to be.
That follow through.
Like the swoosh.
Oh, man, that's going to be fun.
And there will be the little details, too. Same guy that did the Niehaus statue, you know, the scorebook and how detailed that was. There'll be little things on the Griffey statue, too, that I've been told.
And when you go out to see Dave's statue out there in right center field on the concourse, look on that book. It's game five of the American League Division Series against the Yankees. Edgar hit the double, and he wrote, "Unbelievable." And you could read it in that scorebook. That's something. Our thanks to everybody that made the show possible tonight. Mariners producer-engineer Kevin Krem and Matty Harden on all the buttons there inside the control room. Shannon Dreher, Dave Valley. I'm Rick Riz saying so long, everybody. Until next week, same time, right here from our ESPN studios. Hot Stove Baseball from Seattle. Can't wait for spring training 2017 coming up in just a couple of weeks.
Can it, Matt?
See you later!